97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the strength of two arguments surrounding reform of the NCAA. Our guest, antitrust economist Andy Schwartz. We're speaking to him by way of Skype from Oakland, California. Andy, in a recent article, you wrote about two groups, both of which want reform of the NCAA, but you say that's where the similarity ends. Will you explain what you mean by team reform and team market?
Sure, and thanks very much for having me on. Team reform, I think, can best be described as a group of people who feel that the real problem with college sports is that it is too commercial, by which they mean too designed to too set up to provide appeal to consumers, generate revenue, and do all the things that we normally think a business should be doing, and that as a result of being focused on generating not just revenue, but generating sort of happiness among consumers, that it's missing its real point, they would say, which is hard maybe for me to quite get, but I think is something along the lines of vigorous exercise among strapping young men at academic institutions. For team market, it's sort of the opposite, which is that, and I consider myself a member of Team Market, we think that when a college or university comes up with an innovative product that's marketable, and the example I typically give is if the chemistry department comes up with a patentable new product, or the agriculture department comes up with a new grade of seed, patents it, and commercializes it, that's good for society, that our academic institutions are not just pure intellectual exercise without application. There are also ways that schools can create commercial products, and if they do, those should be commercialized. And that the real problem with how the NCAA works is not that they're too commercial, but that they carve out one, and really only one, aspect of their business model, which is compensating the people that generate the popularity of the product. They carve that out and say that, well, that can't be commercial. The rest of us can be. So in summary, I think that what team reform would like to do is make the rest of the way the sports works, except for paying players, more like paying players. They would like to allow schools to cap how much coaches get paid. They would like schools to take less money from networks to broadcast their shows. And team market, on the other hand, would like to keep things the way they are, generally speaking, but to bring students into that all-American process known as free market economics.
Andy, you mentioned this, but let's reiterate for our listeners that you are clearly a team market person, and you're arguing from that perspective.
That's correct.
And you say team reform is actually kind of buying into the NCAA's PR campaign. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that everybody buys into it sometime. We all think about the glorious old days of college football when people came out with raccoon coats and crowds filled the stands, but it was all because athletes were pure students and there was no commerce involved somehow. And that's just a false reading of history. Almost from the days that Rutgers and Princeton first went out and played each other, college football in particular has been commercial. Tickets were sold, players were paid. I think in the 1920s, University of Pittsburgh team basically had a strike because the underclassmen were upset that the seniors were being paid more than they were. So it's based on a myth. Now, in the 1940s, after the war, and then particularly in the mid-1950s, the NCAA succeeded in putting nationwide cap on how much athletes could be compensated. At first, they tried to make it zero, literally zero, not even a scholarship. And scholarships were considered dirty money. That didn't work. Eventually, things settled in on a scholarship, though that scholarship originally included elements like a stipend, which then later became forbidden. But in that process of doing that, the myth-making around the idea that somehow this made the sport, this had always been the way the sport ran, and this is what made the sport popular, came about. And that's just false. The sport was immensely popular in the 20s when there were no rules against paying athletes.
Andy, we have about 2 minutes in this first segment. I do want to, though, get into exploitation. And it seems to me that that word, or what exploitation is really in the eye of the beholder. What do you think is exploitation? The if you will walk us through a little exchange during the O'Bannon trial between Judge Wilkin and NC2A Chief Mark Emmert.
Sure, I can do that. Judge Wilkin took the opportunity, because this was a bench trial and there was no jury, to ask her own questions, which wouldn't happen in a jury trial. And she asked Mark Emmert, after the lawyers were done, to help her understand why the NCAA considered an athlete being used in a commercial product but not paid to be protecting them from exploitation rather than exploiting them, which might be the normal way you'd think about it if somebody had to do work and didn't get paid. And the way Mark Emmert described it was, he basically said that the NCAA considers exploitation using athletes to sell products.
Sports Focus will return right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with antitrust economist Andy Schwartz. He's in Oakland, California, and we're speaking to him via Skype. Andy, you walked us through this discussion, if you will, this questioning Judge Wilkin to the head of the NC2A, Mark Emmert. And it's difficult to understand how he was trying to reason that not paying the player. I can't even quite follow what he was trying to say. But basically, if you're going to allow a player to endorse a product and the payer gets paid for that, and you call that exploitation, it reminds me of the old song. You know, if it feels this good getting used, just keep on using me till you use me up. You know, I don't see that as exploitation at all.
I think this actually ties back in nicely to the idea of the difference between what team reform thinks about and team market. And the NCAA ends up sort of straddling it, because they have strong economic incentives to engage in the conduct that they consider exploitation as long as they keep the money. But when they can't keep the money, they want to make sure that nobody else can either. So that's the NCAA is sort of in a weird spot. But to a person who's maybe a little less financially interested, that idea of the athlete appearing in the commercial as inherently a form of exploitation, I think comes down to this idea that money corrupts, and that pursuit of money is an inherently corrupting activity. And I know that there are philosophies that view that. I think that you could find elements of that in the Bible. I think that you can certainly find elements of that in the sort of 18th, 19th century aristocracy view that sullying yourself with labor was base and crass, and that people who had to work for a living were inherently inferior to people who were born into the aristocracy and didn't need to. But I would hope that as a country that pretty much was founded on a rejection of this idea of those sort of legalized class status differences, and a country of workers, really, that we wouldn't fall for that. That we wouldn't fall for this idea that because I every day come to my office in pursuit of pay to support my family in compensation for my hard work, I think that's ennobling. I think that the process of labor is a good thing. And I also think that's actually not that controversial. And so it's funny that we have this little spot where we go, oh, well, it would be wrong if this college kid were doing that. If I can give you an example, Harris Pastides, who is the president of the University of South Carolina, said that he thinks fans like college football because the athletes have not yet been corrupted by money.
And they will be eventually, but they haven't been yet.
That's right. And I just I can't fathom when it's going to be that I became corrupted by money or Dr. Pastides became corrupted by money. How we know that? I think the way you get corrupted by money is if you're given money to do something illegal. I think it's the illegality that's the corruption, not the money. And the pursuit of money through valid, legal, healthy economic activity is anything but corrupting.
You talk about decommercializing, which you you seem to argue that team reform wants, that sport be decommercialized. But you write that that means it's going to be less desirable. Is that really what you think team reform wants?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's what they want, but it's what is implicit in what they're asking for. Because if you say we want this sport to be less commercial, one activity, one thing that I think that they would quickly agree with me is a lot of people on team reform think no games besides on Saturdays. Because having a game on a Thursday night or a Tuesday night if you're in the MAC might take away from the academic activities of the athletes. And I think that's true. But consumers want games during the middle of the week. And so that's taking away from consumers something that they want. It's making the product less desirable.
Well, if I'm a MAC player, I think I would like some national exposure regardless of which night it's on, and I'll adjust my schedule and work with my professors to adjust my schedule to accommodate that. Why do you think the other camp would see that as so wrong?
I agree with you. And moreover, there are enough options out there in the market that if I'm not that kid, if I'm like, you know what, I just know I need to be in school on Tuesdays, I have options not to go to the MAC. So I think... Again, I feel like if we're going to be empirical and we're going to look at the reality of the world, it's difficult to maintain the logical consistency of team reform. The team reform believes that we should make the world different than it is, not just college sports different than it is. And I think that that's a big difference. I think team market is much more accepting of the world as it is and wants to make sure that college sports adjust to the world, as opposed to maybe deviating more from the world and being more different. But I find that process of damming up economic forces, unless you do it perfectly, there's always a leak. And right now, one of the leaks we see is that the more you hold down the pay of college players, the more schools spend on things that seem outrageous, like gigantic training facilities with waterfalls in them and rapidly escalating coaches' pay. Those are ways to attract talent without paying for the talent because you provide other things that talent also likes. And the idea that we could figure out every single way that a school interested in selling more tickets and having more popular programs would cease to do that and prohibit all commerce in all those spots, I think is overly optimistic.
Sports Focus will return right after this.
...97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion of two different arguments surrounding reform of the NCAA. We're talking with antitrust economist Andy Schwartz, who is in Oakland, California. Andy, you pointed out, you know, this idea of money corrupting. Plenty of people make big money off college sports, just not the athletes. So are they corrupt? by their own reasoning?
I certainly wouldn't agree with that. I think that the reasoning that I laid out to you, and that was, it's not just Dr. Pastides who said that, but he's a strong proponent of that concept. I don't know how you could reach any other conclusion. And I think that if you were to take an individual person, take a coach, Steve Spurrier, who works for Mr. Pastides, I think Steve Spurrier would find it somewhat offensive if that logic were applied to him. But yeah, that's the logical conclusion you get if money corrupts. The older you are, the more you've earned money, the more corrupt you are.
And you're getting corrupted off the very thing that, that we're trying to say needs to be changed, but changed in a certain way, and the way that we suggest that it be changed. And a term that comes up a lot in what you've written is that that whole approach, that whole mindset is pretty paternalistic.
I agree. I agree completely. There is this element of two parts. One is, what are you complaining about? We're giving you way more than anyone else. And the word give hits me hard because they're not giving, they're exchanging. There's a transaction here. I'm going to provide you with a wonderful education and certainly an opportunity that many people would love to get. But in exchange, you're going to provide me with services too. But the paternalistic way of thinking about it is that it's a free gift. It's given without preconditions or a quid pro quo, and that's false. The second piece of it is this idea of enough. So nobody says to me when I say what my bill rate is for what I do, wouldn't it be enough for you to earn half of that? It's probably true. It could be enough, but I have a market value, and I think it's appropriate for me to get paid what that market value is, even if it's a little more or maybe even a lot more than enough for me to eat, live, you know, and get around my town. The ability for me to take my family on a vacation once in a while isn't a necessity, but the way that our economy works, if I can command enough money to save up for that, I think that's good. So similarly here, the paternalistic idea that we give you enough comes, it's very much more like, this is your allowance, I am your parent. The thought of you being an independent person who has the own his own choice as to what he thinks is enough is really not in the consideration set.
And I think it does come down to who gets to make that decision as far as what's enough, what's too much, et cetera, et cetera. Just as we talked about earlier about what is exploitation. Well, I think this is exploitation. You think that is exploitation. You know, where do we meet? I did want to, Andy, jump into the argument for against changing the NC2A model is that it's going to create this competitive imbalance. You always hear that. And you argue that the system creates an economic imbalance. What's the difference there?
Well, the first thing is that the current system is imbalanced now. Everybody knows that. We do not expect that a school in the Sun Belt Conference is going to be invited to the college football playoff, even though as it stands right now, every team is eligible and one of those schools could potentially have a great season, but they won't get invited. So we know that. We also know that when they're out recruiting, they don't have a chance to get a five-star athlete if a comparably located big school wants it. So that's the first thing. But the way the system is set now, it's much more expensive for a school like that if it wants to upgrade its program to do so. It has to build a gigantic stadium, a training facility. It has to go out and hire a coach. Instead of making a competitive offer for one or two impact athletes and jump-starting their program.
That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Andy Schwartz. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And thanks to you for listening. Cheers!
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.